It is with excitement that I get to share with you that the Leukemia Foundation has developed a new resource. This resource is called the Online Support Service, where it provides a wealth of services to assist a person living with blood cancer throughout their patient journey. So whether you're a patient who has just been diagnosed, in treatment or in survivorship, this service provides access to targeted learning modules, a suite of amazing services and online programs. And you also have the ability to chat with an experienced blood cancer support coordinator at just one click. It gives people a personalized and intuitive way to learn about important topics, including what to expect beyond treatment. This service is simple to use and is filled with content curated by the Leukemia Foundation for people with any type of blood cancer. It notably features a digital energy coach to help patients manage fatigue. So jump onto our website and look up our new and exciting product called the Online Blood Cancer Support Service.
You get to a point in life where you think you're in control of everything, and all of a sudden it gets taken out from underneath you.
I guess I kind of felt ripped off.
It's just living in the moment and just being adaptable to situations.
Give people voices to talk about, you know what, that phase is often the hardest, and be prepared for it because it's not what you think it will be.
Talking Blood Cancer, a podcast for those facing blood cancer by the Leukemia Foundation.
Find the best way forward using their own purpose that they have in their life and using their passions.
I've lost fear and doubt. Like, I no longer doubt myself in situations, and nothing scares me.
That gives you another goal to work towards and a reason to live.
I'm Kate Arkadiv, and I am the host of Talking Blood Cancer. This podcast shares the stories of the people we have connected with who have faced a blood cancer, so that you, our listeners, can gain insight, find purpose, and take inspiration. Before we get into today's episode, the Leukemia Foundation acknowledges the traditional owners of the land on which we share these stories. We recognise their continuing connection to land, sea and community as the first storytellers of this country. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present. This story may contain content that some listeners may find difficult and challenging. We encourage anyone listening to take care of their own mental health and well-being. The purpose of this podcast is to share real-life stories of people living with a blood cancer, and any discussion of medical treatments is not an endorsement. We encourage you to seek advice from your treatment team if you have any questions regarding your diagnosis, side effects, or treatment. If you would like to talk to someone, or even if you would like more information on our services or today's episode, please feel free to contact 1-800-620-420, and someone will be able to connect you with your local blood cancer support coordinator. So, let's get into today's episode. Today, Vanessa interviews Robin Matthews, who lives on the land outside of Ceduna. Robin is a hard-working dump truck driver building roads for the Indigenous community. While working out on the APY lands, which is 700 kilometres west of Marla and can be found in the far northwest of South Australia. Robin was diagnosed with stage 4 lymphoma in 2021. Robin tells his story of what it was like to be diagnosed in a rural area, all while managing his grief after losing his beloved wife to cancer, just months before his own diagnosis. Robin shares how his family have been his strength in his darkest days and how finding a community within the Leukemia Foundation helped him manage his diagnosis.
So today's podcast, we welcome Robin Matthews. He's a man that has come from the Yarralina community outside of Ceduna to have his treatment with us at Lightsview in Adelaide, and he's going to the Royal Adelaide Hospital for that treatment. He is here today to share his story because he has a bit of a story to tell about how he was first diagnosed and the journey that it took to actually get to see a medical professional. So if you'd like to start with that story, Robin, we welcome you here today.
Yeah, thank you, Vanessa. Yeah, my journey started up on the APY lands, actually, probably about 700 k's west of Marla. I was working on a dump truck up there, building roads for the Aboriginal communities and everything. And I got up one evening, I was sitting in the garage there, having a yarn with some of the men up there, and one of my mates from Penang, he actually said to me, mate, he said, you're losing a lot of weight. And I said, yeah, well, I'm working 21 days straight and 14, 15-hour days. I said, I've got to lose weight, you know. He said, no, he said, you're really dropping weight. And it sort of worried me a little bit because at night time and everything, I lay on my back and I could sort of feel my ribs and everything. And I thought, something's going on here. Probably hard work, that's all. And then next morning I got up and jumped on the dump truck, 6 o'clock in the morning, went to work, and about 9 o'clock I felt actually physically sick and I actually dozed off. And next thing is a beep, 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 and I got an excavator alongside me loading me. He said, you're right, mate. And I said, yeah, I'm right, I just had a little doze. He said, you were dozing for 5 minutes. He said, I couldn't even wake you up. He said, are you okay? And I said, no, I don't really feel them flash. I'm going to jump out for a minute. So I jumped out. Then I was actually physically sick, and I never get sick like that in the morning, ever. And I knew there was something wrong. So I said, no, look, I've got to pull the pin. I've got to go and make some phone calls back in, see if I can get in. And there's 5 clinics on the communities up there on the APY lands, and I was unable to get into any of them. This is on a Saturday morning. And unless it was an emergency and they'd get the flying doctor in. Well, I knew it wasn't an emergency, but I knew I was sick. So I rang Coopedy Hospital and they didn't have a doctor on board until Monday, which is 2 days' time. So I rang Port Augusta Hospital and they were fantastic. They really, really were. They said, look, if you can get down here as soon as possible. I said, well, I'm probably 9 to 11 hours away from you. And I said, I got a fair way to go. Nearly 1,100 k's to travel. I said, I probably won't get down tonight, but I'll see how it goes. Usually I can ride that 11 hours, it doesn't worry me. But this time I just couldn't. And I got down as far as Glendamba, about 500 k's away from Port Augusta, and I physically and mentally, I was drained. I just had to camp for the night. Got up next morning, and I felt a little bit better, drove into Port Augusta, got in there about 12:30, and the emergency nurse that was on there at the time said, look, you're probably going to have a wait of a couple of hours. We've got people in front of you. And I said, that's fair enough, as long as I'm here now. But then 5 minutes after, there's a doctor come out. And she said, is there a Robin Matthews here? And I said, yeah, there is. He said, Robin, I want you to come straight in here from what you told me on the phone. There's something really drastically wrong with you. So got me in there, and within half an hour, they'd be under a CT scan. And that took 2 hours to look at the results and everything. And they said, we're going to meet you in the hospital straight away. You've got lumps all over you. All your lymph nodes are all swollen like golf balls out here from what we can see. So we're talking about doing a biopsy tomorrow on you underneath your arm, take one of your lymph nodes out, and we'll take it from there. So I camped in the hospital at night. And I do have to say they were fantastic. They're really well, the way they look after everything. Next morning they booked me in the surgery, took the lymph node out and everything, and they said, now, you can go home. They said, but if you go home and everything, it's going to be 7 days before we get the results back from Royal Adelaide. So obviously you can't go back to work. And I said, no, I'll travel up. I'll drive back up. So, you know, it's only 6 hours to drive back up, so we'll go back up there. So I got in there at 4 o'clock that afternoon, and 4:05 I got a phone call from Royal Adelaide. And they said, we're supposed to ring you in 6 days' time, but the doctor in Port Augusta said, this is pretty urgent, from the CT scan and everything, we'd like you to come to Adelaide on the Tuesday. And that's only 1 day after I just got home. So I said, yeah, I'll travel there, no worries. So I left that same night and drove to Port Augusta, and the next morning into Royal Adelaide And they put me straight into hospital for a fortnight, but they were unsure what it was. They didn't diagnose as lymphoma first. They thought it was a rare bacterial disease that happens in the Northern Territory and that. And it's like a bacteria that gets into your bloodstream.
And is that the one that comes from the dirt?
That's the one that comes from the dirt.
I've heard of that up in Darwin, yeah.
And because I've been working, I work in the dust all the time. You know, the old dump truck and the air conditioner and everything, and you're covered in red dirt all the time. Mm. And plus I worked on the Maralinga lands on and off for 50 years in the radioactive area. That didn't help much either. That was on my mind a lot. But once I got into hospital there, it took them 14 days and they still were unable to diagnose Hodgkin's lymphoma stage 4. And they said, we're going to do another 2 biopsies, which they did, one on my jaw. And then the last one, they took a full lymph node out of my groin. And they said, it's going to be a week before we know all the results and everything. You can go home for about 4 or 5 days if you want. And I said, oh, that'd be good. So I drove back to St. Gilbert that afternoon. Only made it as Port Augusta, and they rang me from Port Augusta and said, no, you've got to come back in. You've got Hodgkin's lymphoma, the blood cancer, and it's really, really bad. So I drove back into Adelaide that night. Next morning I was in at Royal Adelaide there, saw my haematologist, saw my lymphoma coordinator. She was fantastic too. They really are there. And they said, well, this is what's happening, and it's really bad. And they said, this is in November now, end of November. We want to start you on heavy chemo, probably the heaviest chemo we've ever done before, because you're just riddled with it. Your whole body's just riddled with cancer. And we don't even know if we can get rid of it. But we think if we can hit you with this hard stuff, but it's going to be painful. I said, yeah, I've been painful before. I've been to Ben's twice and diving 80 feet down. I don't know where
really?
I'm at. Oh, yeah. Don't you worry. I've been shot in the face 33 years ago and had 17 operations on my face. So, yeah, I've had a pretty hard life. Don't worry about that. Mm. But I know what pain is.
Mm.
And I don't know whether I should have gone through it because the pain from that lymphoma was terrible. It was.
Okay.
And the chemo and that, you know. But they said, you can go, we want you to go home for a week, talk to your family, work out what you want to do, but we want to start it as soon as possible. I said, no, so I want to start it now. So 3 days' time, I started my chemo. And on the 27th of January, they did another scan of me, CT scan and a PET scan. And they said, look at this. They said, it looks like we've just about got it all from that heavy chemo.
Amazing.
But you're going to have to stay here. I've done chemo for 4 months now. I've got another 3 months of light chemo to do. It still knocks me around a fair bit.
Mm.
But it's not as painful as what the first lot was, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm on the mend, and I've already organised my boss. I'm going back to work at the end of June, back up on the bulldozer and the dump truck again. So
that's amazing as well.
Work.
Yep.
Just occupy my mind more than anything, you know?
Yes. And I think you've done really well in terms of your energy levels as well. You've had your down times, but I think you're always quite sprightly. You've hung on to your energy quite
well. Yeah, I am in that regard. But see, the double whammy I got hit with is when they said about the Hodgkin's lymphoma stage 4, which is a bad one, and it's a rare Hodgkin's, then they hit me with another one and said I got tuberculosis on the brain, and I've had that for 20 years. But it's laying dormant at the moment, and they're really worried that the chemo would kick it off and then I'm in big trouble, could develop into a brain tumour. So that knocked me around mentally, and I went really low. And I mean really low. I didn't even know what to do, to be honest.
Yeah.
I didn't want to talk to the kids. I didn't want to talk to my grandchildren, anybody.
I remember that. And I remember the day that you came in to tell us that it was clear, when they were looking for a brain tumour and you came in to show us the scan that it was clear, it was a very happy day.
It most certainly was, Vanessa, it was, you know. And that then picked me up mentally. So, I'm back up on top of the world again. I'm thinking of what's happening in the future, whereas before I couldn't think anything like that. It was just that downtime sort of. And I realise a lot of people go through worse than what I go through. Don't worry about that, you know, but it is a shock to the system. See, I lost my wife 15 months ago from cancer, gallbladder cancer, and they were unable to help her with the chemo and the surgery because of the COVID, and she was 74 years old. So that was a big thing on me. I didn't want my children and grandchildren to go through what they saw of their nana go through and the mother. And I had to really pull myself out of this mental fog and do it for them as well.
And that's so much on top of, you know, you're already going through a period of grief and then to be diagnosed with a horrible disease.
Yeah, it's just, that was the biggest thing, you know.
It's huge. And so COVID stopped her from having surgery because she was too unwell.
She couldn't have a surgery because her heart was a little bit weak and she passed all the tests apart from the anesthetist. And then the thing is, no, I don't want to put you under because I don't know whether you'll come back out. It's a major surgery on the gallbladder.
Mm-hmm.
We're just going to have to grin and bear it and hope chemo will come in. And that's when COVID hit.
Right.
And then the chemo doctor said, we can't give you chemo. It's going to knock your immune system down so low. And you get COVID, you'll probably die from it. No. So they said,
that's horrible.
We're just hoping that the cancer doesn't develop too bad. And it sort of lay dormant for 9 months. And then in January of last year, it came back. And it was very aggressive. And within 2 months, bang, she was gone, you know. It was a terrible time. But the only consolation we all say is she didn't suffer with the pain. That's the biggest thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that was in my mind all the time, that am I going to get that sort of thing? And I can put up pain, but, yeah, I don't know, some of the stuff, it does get to you, you know.
When you see somebody you love going through it, it's just horrible. And you've got some beautiful family. Your carer staying with you at the moment is your granddaughter.
Yeah, my granddaughter, Tori, and I've got three great-grandchildren staying with me. I've got
they keep
really...
you on your feet.
Sorry?
They keep you on your toes.
Yeah, they most certainly do. but no, I've got a really supportive family. We've got 25 grandchildren and 24 great-grandchildren.
Wow.
And they ring me nearly every second day.
That is beautiful.
Just to sort of pick me up a little bit, and I find that that's really loving, you know. It's got that family support.
Yeah, it makes you quite grounded, I think, when young ones, you know, when the especially the great-grandchildren are talking to you, they're oblivious to life's trials that we all go through, and they're very innocent in the way they speak. And I think that's it, no matter what mood you're in, sometimes that can cheer you up because they're just so the things that come out of children's mouths is just so innocent.
You are dead right there. You are dead right.
And do you think right at the beginning when that mate said you've lost 17 kilos, do you think that, or you've lost a lot of weight, do you think being kind of remotely based and having your work, and do you think it's something that you just went, oh, well, even before that, were you going, I'm losing weight, but it's probably just the hard work, or there could be something wrong, but there's not much help medically out here anyway in terms of those five clinics, or that, because you were saying to me the other day that they, even on the weekend, it's considered they're shut. There is somebody on call, but only for emergencies.
Only for emergencies.
Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, they are good in the clinics. I will say that.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
But they would have to get the flying doctor in. And, you know, to bring the flying doctor in from Adelaide, it's about 5 hours out. And then to say, be diagnosed, well, look, you'll have to go and have some tests. It's really pointless getting a flying doctor in.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to do anything apart from maybe fly you out. And if it's not an emergency, you've got them out there for nothing. And you know, they've got a lot of commitments and with sick
people. Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, accidents and things like that. So I didn't want to do that.
No.
I've had that happen
before.
Yeah,
it was good that you did seek help the day that you did, probably, or you may have had to call
I realised that. If I hadn't bit the bullet that day and did it, I think next day I'd be on my back and I'd have to find up for him. I was getting sick. And for me to admit that, it's a big thing. I used to grin and bear it and say, oh, well, I'll get over this, no worries. And 9 times out of 10 you do, you know?
Yep. And so to turn to a positive, you said you're going back to work in June. So you've told your boss and you're all ready to do that. So that's something to look forward to for you because I know you love your work and you love being around the guys that work there and back into kind of that social being again, isn't it? Because if being in the accommodation must be a bit lonely at times, even though you've got your family around you. It's not your mates around you. And I know with COVID, we haven't been able to have visitors, so that would, you know, that's pretty hard. So, Guy, you must be excited about getting home and mixing with people again.
I am in a way, but I do have to say the support that we get here from the Leukemia Foundation is, you can't really describe how well this place can run. And I'm not saying that because I'm looking at you right now. It is just great. Everybody is so cheerful, so helpful. You can't do enough for people here. And, you know, not a great lot of people know about this place.
No, that's the thing.
So don't you worry. I'll be hopefully it's not from people with cancer, but I'll be spruiking the care and kindness to get in this place.
And it's true what you say. It's you know, we try and make it like that. We try and make it the best kind of home away from home that it can be. And I think, you know, with the people that we have around us at the moment in the organisation in Adelaide, it's a beautiful place to be, even at a time when it's not a great time to be anywhere. So that's really good that you feel that, and it's good that. But you're right about people not knowing, because until you need services like us, people don't really think about services like us. So it's not something that, you know, Leukemia Foundation, I guess, is known for the Greater Shave and things that we do in the fundraising space, but we don't really, patients don't necessarily learn about us until a practical thing is needed. Like
I was actually very lucky, Vanessa, when I went in to see my haematologist, Narini, and don't ask me her last name, it's about 20 letters long. But she's great, she really is. There was another lady there called Sam Caracas, and she was a lymphoma coordinator, and she actually married a young man in Port Lincoln that I knew his uncle very well, Stephen Caracas. And she said, you know, we can put you up in the cancer motels, one on Greenhill Road, one on the Equipment Terrace. She said, but I think the best shot for you, Robin, you're going to be in. We can't let you leave Adelaide with the tuberculosis and the lymphoma the way it is. So we're going to try and get you in the Leukemia Foundation, the three-bedroom apartment there, and you can have a carer there, your granddaughter or whoever you choose. And because my granddaughter at the time had a four-month-old baby, she wasn't working, so she was a logical one to come in and everything. But Sam was really, really good getting me into this place. Within, I think it was 4 days of inquiring, I was virtually booked in the following day.
It just
went so quick. And it took a lot of pressure off my mind because I was trying to work out how can I afford to pay for motels and stay in Adelaide, you know, and I thought 3 months at the time. Now it's going to be 7 months, but that doesn't worry me. I want to follow all my treatment through, even though that I'm nearly all clear now. I want to make sure it's done properly, and then they have the follow-up scans and every couple of months like that. So, yeah, this is a big thing off my mind of the cost of everything in Adelaide. Even though I'm bored, I love my fishing and I love my work, but I realise I've got to do it, and it's working, put it that way.
Absolutely. It's a story that we love to hear when people are so unwell and you've gotten through your treatment and, you know, you're kind of at the other end, as you say, with the lighter end of the treatment and you got your energy back and you're back to your normal sprightly self. So it's, and I'm sure that you still have a lot more fatigue than you have in the past. And I know that you like your Nana naps. So, you know, that's important, and to keep doing that and keep listening to your body and, having those naps and doing that little bit of exercise that you can do, because you're such an active man.
The one thing I will say, they did say when I had all this treatment and everything, you know, I'm going to lose the sense of smell, taste, won't want to eat, things like that. But I've been sort of forcing myself to eat, because I know that what I'm eating, like fruit and vegetables and big meals and things like that, that's doing my body good. And I've always been a good eater. Even though when I've been a bit crook and everything, I've always forced myself to have a feed, because that's the only thing going to keep your body going. So, yeah, I've got that thing. But the worst part about it, I'm always worried about this bloody COVID and everything, and everybody's going through it. We know that. But all the symptoms of COVID, with a runny nose and fatigue and headache and everything, I get that from my chemo anyway.
Yes.
So I do a rapid antigen test every 2 days, and it's all been clear. But I've got to do it only just to be safe or anything, But I don't expose myself outside. I always wear my mask and everything. I'm very careful in that regard.
Yeah.
So touch wood. I don't get that, put it that way, because my immune system, round about every 3 weeks, is really down low. My white blood cells.
Yeah.
And they always give me a needle in the stomach, and that picks me up again. And that's another painful one that goes into your bones. And it feels
That's the GCSF, isn't it? It goes into your tummy and then your bones.
That's it.
Yes.
And it feels like you're paralyzed. It feels like I've got a crooked back and I can't move and things like that. But after about 3 days, that goes away and you're back to normal again. So, it's a long journey, but I've already done, I've been 5 months in Adelaide, 4 months on chemo now. So, another 3 months, that's nothing for me.
It's amazing, and I think that you brought up COVID. I think the COVID stuff makes people a little bit more nervous about returning to normal and returning home as well, because at least in the accommodation, that it's very well protected in the accommodation, and you're only really transporting to hospital and back, and then for groceries, etc. But being back out with community and at work is a little bit stressful when your immune system is quite low. So. That is a worry for a lot of people.
I've been home twice now. My hematologist said I could go home and spend a few days home, see my family, which I did after 3.5 months. And I stayed at my daughter's house instead of staying out at Yarralina, where we got a house out there. I stayed at my daughter's house. But my daughter works at the hospital in Sojourner, doing the COVID in the hospital. So she actually has to be tested every day, and she tests the children every day as well. So I was going into a clean environment in that regard.
And they're so careful, yeah.
And they're very careful for their work-wise and everything. So that wasn't too bad in that regard. But it was stopping on the road. If you pull in for a road house and that, you think, should I go in there, should I not? So what my daughter used to do when I'd leave, my granddaughter used to do here, she'd make some sandwiches and cold drinks and everything, and I'd have my feed on the road. And then when I come home, my daughter did the same in Sojourner. So I traveled, didn't have to go road out.
Great idea.
Yes,
stay away from it as much as possible.
Yeah.
And then when you get back home, what's your kind of, like, you love your fishing, so once you get back to work and get into a little bit of a routine, as you said, you're going to take it slow and do some work on your own. I think you've got a car that you want to work on.
Yeah.
First, see how much work you can fit into a day without getting
exactly
absolutely
right. And see if I really need to have that rest during the day. And that'll be the biggest thing, because our company, well, not our company, my boss's company and everything, builds roads all on the isolated areas, the APY lands. Our next job is up at Innamincka. Doing 70 km of roads up there, getting ready to get bitumised, so I'll be on the nose and the dump truck and everything, machines. And I don't want to go up there and then can't do a decent day's work, because that plays on him. He's not getting the work done. So I've got to be really careful committing myself. I think I can do it. but I want a fortnight home just to pot around, go and get some, change tyres, fix cars. And if I think I'm all right then, which I think I will be, then I will go back to work. But I will do the right thing by the boss first.
Mm, absolutely. No, that's fantastic. But, yeah, and listening to your body and making sure. And even if the boss said to you, you know, if you could do this many hours a day, then take a break and have that rest. And but I suppose hard when you're out working on roads, though. There's nowhere to have a rest.
No, he did say to me, he said, Robin, I don't know how you're going to go back up there. He said, because there's no light duties, you know that. And I said, no, I don't want no light duties. If I can't go to work, I won't even go up there.
Yeah.
I said, but I'm going back to work, and I'm telling you now, Snowy, I'll be back at work. And he said, yeah, I know what you like too, you know. And hopefully I've got two of my grandsons that when the job starts in 3 months, they're going to be employed as well. So I can actually help teach them. One's on the cattle station up at Macumba out from Moondadada, and the other one works in a yard gang at Wyala. Both 23 and 24 years old, young fellas, families. And what I want to do is get them into the workforce so that when I retire, they can continue on and they'll end up with a really good job out of it, you know.
That's so fantastic.
It'll be nice having the family there for support. They'll be able to help me a little bit, the two grannies.
Yeah. You know? Two strong young lads. They can help you
most
out.
Certainly. They're built like bloody thing too, you know.
Oh, wow. Oh, that'll be fantastic. You have such a strong family connection. It's beautiful.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. Definitely.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether you know, with Aboriginal families and everything, they are very strong, connected family.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And even my wife and everything, you know, after she passed away, even when we get together, all the gang, all the family and everything, we tell her stories as well, and to the great grandchildren, so they can remember their nana, even though they never met her, some of them.
That's right.
They'll be able to remember those her stories. We've always got her pictures up showing them kids and things like that. And
yeah.
Probably when I go, they'll do the same. Hopefully they'll do the same for me, you know.
I bet they will. And you said that her family were the traditional owners of the
Maralinga land.
Is it Maralinga? Yeah.
Yep.
And that's where Maralinga is, where they did a lot of the testing.
Where they did the 7 major atomic bombs. They first started in 1956, 4
that's
there
terrible.
In 56, 3 in 57. But it wasn't the major bombs that did the damage. It contaminated the land, but it was only short term. It was the minor experiments they did for the next 6 years afterwards, 700 minor trials where they used pure plutonium and uranium-239 and beryllium and all those ones. They were the ones that done the damage. That's why they did the big cleanup in 1994 to 2000.
Yep.
And I missed out on that cleanup. I should have been there for that. But I was walking down the road ready to go to Adelaide to get a job with McMahon's Construction on the cleanup. And my old boss, Shark Fisherman, he pulled up to get me down to the bus stop. And he said, where are you off to? I said, I'm going to Adelaide. I'm going up to Maralinga to work up on the Maralinga lands. On the cleanup up there, clean the radiation up. He said, well, I just bought another boat and I need another abalone diver and a shark fisherman. So I'll pay you double what they were going to pay you. And I said, you fair thing and missing, yep. I said, right, I'm done. That's it. Come on, let's go fishing. And that was it on the floor of the moment, yeah.
You had jobs coming out of everywhere. So tell us a little bit about abalone fishing. So how long did you do that for? Well, you obviously were experienced before then. So
yeah, I left school when I was 14 years old. In Port Lincoln, I had no worries about going to school. I'd breeze through school, you know. I'd wag school 3 days a week and still pick it up at the end of the week.
Wow.
You know? Because one of my best mates was Tony Sandick. Now he's a multimillionaire. And me and him started fishing at 9 years old. We used to go and borrow his father's rowboat. We row from North Shields into Port Lincoln, catching squid and Tommy Ruffs and that, and get his father to sell it for us. Once I got to 14 years old, all my mates were all working. So I said, no, I'm going to work. Dad said, no, you're not. You're going to get a trade first. He said, but you haven't even got a job. I said, yeah, I have. I'm starting on the torpedo tomorrow morning, tuna fishing. He said, you can't go on that boat. It's the worst boat in the fleet. I said, it's a start. Well, I only did one trip on there, and it was the worst boat in the fleet too. Yeah. But as soon as I come back in, I got another job on the Roslyn Star, and that was a better tuna boat. And then from then on, I just stuck it out. I went shark fishing and prawn fishing and everything. And then along come when I was 16, Hagen Steer come along and a bloke called Donnie Morrison, and they needed an abalone diver. And I said, I've never done abalone diving, but I said, I've done free diving all my life. I said, yeah, I'll give it a go, no worries. And
you've done free diving all your life, did you say?
Yeah.
We free diving. Oh.
Years ago down in Port Lincoln, they didn't unload the tuna at the wharf. They unloaded at the town jetty, and they unloaded it with just a rope and a hoist, and they pulled six tuna up at a time. Nine times out of ten, they dropped one tuna in the water.
Oh.
So our kids used to dive down, and they'd give us 2 shillings if we would recover a tuna from the bottom. Well. And it was 25 feet deep, see? So us kids away down there, we'd dive down, pick a tuna up, and then we'd get about 10 tuna a day. So we'd make about £1 a day. We were in big money then, you know, we was only kids. This is in the bloody...
That's crazy.
In the 60s, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And
so diving, might be easy. Yeah. No.
And I went, my last dive was probably about 7 months ago. But that was only 30 foot deep. I couldn't do 80, 90 feet dive anymore. I'm at the bends twice, diving out the islands from Sejuna. And that's painful. Not as bad as the chemo, but it's bloody painful, for sure. But no, I've had a good life in that regard.
You've done so much.
But I still love my fishing. A lot of people, you know, if you do work and everything, they say you don't want to go back and do that as a recreation.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I'll go fishing any day if I can. I just love it, you know. I really do.
Well, that's great. Well, hopefully when you get home and you start a little bit of work again, you go fishing and you can get back into your little bit of a routine again.
Yeah.
What would be if you had to share with any of our listeners that have – you know, that are living with a blood cancer at the moment or just been diagnosed or, you know, about to start treatment, what's a little golden nugget of how to move forward, how to kind of get
you
through
that
period?
You know what I think it is?
Yep.
I think myself is the day that I started listening, the same day they told me I had lymphoma, I listened to my hematologist straight away and my lymphoma coordinator, and everything they told me to do, I did. Now, this might sound silly, but she said, Robin, because you got the tuberculosis as well, we're worried about that. She said, but your lymphoma is really, really bad. And she said, if you don't have this chemo, she said, you won't see the end of February. 3 months and you'll be gone. And I said, well, you know, I want to do it straight away. And she said, that means no alcohol. And I said, well, that'll be a bit of a shock because I like my beer after work.
Yeah,
I will do it, and I did not have a drink for 3.5 months. And when she gave me the all clear, and she said, "You know what? You can have a couple of beers tonight just to celebrate, but don't go over the fence." Mm-hmm. Which I didn't. I had 3 beers. Just to listen to what they tell you—they're the experts.
Yeah,
they know what's going on. They know what your body's going to tell you and everything. You don't know. You've never had this thing before. So you can't really decide, well, this is my treatment, I'll do this and this and this. So everything they told me, I listened to, and I still today. And when she said to me, are you still having a couple of quiet beers? And I said, yeah, I have 2 or 3 beers on a Saturday night. I said, but nothing else. Don't hit the heavy stuff, any rum or anything like that. Do the right thing. She said, no, that's good. She said, it hasn't affected your treatment, so you continue on doing that. But like I said, they are the experts, Vanessa. And
that's a great. That's so true. And I think, you know, there are times when we question treatments because they are tough. And I think sometimes the treatment makes you feel worse than the actual disease. But there is you can prove today that there is light at the end of the tunnel, and you do come out the other end. And even though you're still undergoing treatment, you're through the worst bit. So
yeah.
I think that's a really good thing to share. And also that, yeah, they are the specialists and that they've studied this for years, and
exactly the treatments
improve every every year as well. Yeah. And the amount of research that's going on out there is crazy. So, yes, that's great.
Well, you hear about it. 15, 20 years ago, if people got cancer, it wasn't, well, are they going to get better? It was, when are they going to die?
Mm.
Nowadays, it's got to be pretty bad cancer to knock you, and it still does. It still kills somebody like that.
Oh, yeah.
They're improving all the time.
Absolutely. Thank you, Robin. That was beautiful story and beautiful. I just think that, you exude this personality that you can get along with anyone, and you have brought lots to us, to the foundation and to Lightsview and Bridgestone Village. Danielle raves about you. As you know, she's always out the front, and she's always very happy when she sees your face, as for everybody here. So we've loved having you, and I thank you so much for doing this today. It's been
just before I go, if I do get the opportunity, I'm going to get you to put it up on the podcast. I'm going down to get a T-shirt made up. And on the front of the T-shirt, I'm going to put I Survived a Bullet, which I did 33 years ago, shot in the face.
Yes.
A shark attack, because me and my diver got stalked by a white great white out from St. Juno one time. But he was on top of the water, 30 feet. We're on the bottom, so shark would never come down. He's got to come up.
No.
And we dodged a bullet there.
Wow.
Survived all the radioactive material at Maralinga, 50-odd years. And surviving bone cancer. So I'm going to put all that up there, and then on the back of my T-shirt, how's that for an effing life? It's still going.
It.
Yeah.
I love
it. I'm definitely going to show you that one.
Well, do you know what? I feel like we need one podcast for each of the bullets.
Yeah, I know.
Stories.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Even today, like this morning, I had to go and get my medication. I forgot to get it the other day, and I had enough of tomorrow, but I thought I'll pop in this morning. And every time I go into Royal Adelaide, I just walk straight into the haematology ward, and I said, I'm just coming to get weighed again. Yep, no worries. You know where it is, Robin. I weigh myself every week. And then the last week I put on 3.2 kilos.
Oh, wow.
So, which is good for me.
Mm.
And I'm feeling a lot better in my body itself. And I know that I'm on the improve, whereas before my body was telling me there was something wrong, you know?
Yes.
But just the little things, even the ladies in the Royal Adelaide, they're the nurses and everything. Yeah, you know where everything is. You've been here before. You go and do it all. You know?
You've made yourself at home.
Just little... little kindnesses like that you walk away happy.
Yes.
I've had a good day today. You know, that's what I feel like, sort of, yeah.
So it could be that even during what many would perceive as their worst time, you can still find those joyful moments when people show kindness and just give that little bit of themselves to patients that are going through a horrible time. So that's how it should be.
Well, the one consolation, though, because I'm bald anyway, I haven't had to pay for a haircut for 4 months.
Yes.
Yeah, and I'm saving on razor blades. I haven't had a shave for 5 weeks, and I've still got no whiskers and everything, but they'll come back.
Sorry about that. They will. Beautiful. Thank you so much.
There's no worries, but it's been a real pleasure, and I just hope that some other people do get to see this. And I realize it's bad getting it, don't worry about that, but there are light at the end of the tunnel.
Beautiful.
If they do the right thing and listen to what their doctor tells them more than anything, and their body as well.
Yes, yes, intuition and your body is
but it makes a big difference when you've got support of what we've got here right now. It really, really does. And to see all your little joyful faces every time I come in, that picks me up too.
Mm.
It does, you know?
Mm,
you've always, your staff always got a smile. Even Darren outside when he's working outside. And,
oh, he's always grinning, Darren.
And Kieran, isn't it, the cleaner?
Yes.
Yeah, I always have a yarn in about 6 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday morning and everything, you know? He's always early. But, no, thank you very much for the opportunity to tell a little bit of my story, you know?
No worries. Thank you so much, Robin.
And that brings us to the end of today's episode. We hope that you found it helpful in some way. If you would like more information on today's show or our services, please feel free to contact 1-800-620-420 and someone will be able to connect you with your local blood cancer support coordinator. Also, if you haven't already, don't forget to subscribe, share, or even give us a rating on your podcast app. Thank you for tuning in today. I'm Kate Arkadiff, and you've been listening to the Leukemia Foundation's podcast, Talking Blood Cancer.